Thank you much, Terry.
Well, thank you.
Okay, we'll talk.
We'll do it again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, well, I got the recorder running still, but I wanted to follow up with you on the OPEC switching to the euro, mm-hmm. Because that is something that's a possibility. I know it's been talked about before, and if they do, then what happens to the price of oil? The euro is stronger than the U.S. dollar, and that does what to the price of oil? It drops the price of oil, correct? Is that right, or is it the other way around?
The euro, you mean, are you talking about to the EU itself? Or
yeah,
the
question is, what happens if they do tie, if OPEC says, you know what, the U.S. dollar is too weak, and we're having to push the price too high, relatively speaking, $100 a barrel, and to them, I guess it looks more like $60 a barrel for them.
$49.80.
So it looks like $50 a barrel crude to them. What happens if they switch? Is that if they switch to the European Union or to the EU's currency? Does that?
Well, that could certainly bring us to a screeching halt. I mean, because the American dollar is only sitting at 73.80. I can't tell you what it is right this second, but it would bring us to a screeching halt, because if you take $1.51 and divide it by 73.80, that's almost two times, that is two times as much as what we are. So it would bring our oil price up dramatically, because we wouldn't have the value.
So our oil price would be
double. More than double of what it is right now, yes.
And did I hear Rogan Sack right? Did he quote a $200 a barrel oil price in there somewhere? Did I hear that?
He said he was looking at a matrix, right?
Somebody was looking at a matrix, yeah. And I
something about they could be profitable blending
soy oil
to make biodiesel if it went there, because soy oil really doesn't figure to make biodiesel.
No.
Yeah.
It's too expensive to use this biodiesel.
Right, and the biodiesel push, I don't think, would be as big as it is, except for the biggest user is the U.S. Navy.
Well, skipping that, just because I thought I heard him say 200, and I wanted to make sure that I heard that right. And we skip that and go back to OPEC chain. What's the possibility, you think, that OPEC would actually tie to the European Union?
The bigger
currency?
Problem comes if we do that and take away from the U.S. dollar. We are so heavily invested from by foreign countries like China, Japan, all the other countries. If we go away as using the dollar as the basis, they're going to probably pull some of their investments out of this country, or the bonds that they have bought, or there are investors as such. And if that happens and all of a sudden we don't have their money here, our economy could be a house of cards, Todd, and that is what's not good.
Right.
We need to still be the currency of the world, or the main source like that. We're losing a lot of power to China, but they're not going to go to the yuan.
Let's go to the other shoe here that Terry brought up here about this idea of we are going to get prices high enough to get the acreage planted here in the U.S. Now, let's brainstorm on that. Are we really going to see people go in and take more ground out of the CRP, take more cotton ground out of production, plow up more pasture? I mean, is there that kind of incentive out here to get 3 to 5 million more acres into production in the U.S.?
Well, let's throw out, I mean, because CRP, Schaefer said we're not doing CRP, so let's just throw it out.
Well, you can out of 2007, there's 10 million acres that can be paid back for a penalty of 25%, which isn't very much. But so some of that could, but you have to still pay a penalty.
Yeah.
Well, you'd have to pay a penalty, and not only that, when land has been laying fallow on CRP, you have to really fertilize the heck out of it to get the fertility that you need. So, you know, the question comes down to, do we have enough fertilizer to be able to do it too? And are they willing to spend the extra money to do that? But,
all the CRP acres out, can we find the acres? Are they out there? Can we take them from other crops?
Well, I think we can. I was just out in Idaho last week, and I'm telling you what, out there, from a dairy perspective and from a barley perspective for Anheuser-Busch and a potato perspective, you're seeing potato acres moving out, going to wheat and going to corn. You're seeing alfalfa acres and corn silage acres doing the same thing. Now Anheuser-Busch is out there, and they're bidding huge amounts of dollars to be able to get malting barley acres, which they never had to do. And so are the acres there? Yeah, there are acres there, but something else suffers along the way.
There are acres there, but are those all irrigated? Certainly.
Yes.
Yeah, I would
yes.
think so. There can't be that many acres out there, are there?
Oh, my Lord, yes. A lot more than you'd ever think.
I'll have to look it up and put it in the newsletter for the weekend, see if we can find out how many total acres are in Idaho. But
Todd, as we talk to some of our customers down the Mid-South, we feel that the government has underestimated the wheat acres. The crop scouts that talk to each other seem to think there's an extra 1 million acres of wheat out there, and every one of those acres is going to be double cropped. So basically, as to what we're looking at here, there should be up to 1 million more acres of double crop beans if what these crop, you know, they're getting paid on so many acres to go scout this wheat. They probably know what they're talking about.
And when we talk to the people in the West, they think the government even messed the wheat, hard red winter wheat acreage up, particularly in Texas and Oklahoma and the western part of Kansas. So, but they haven't corrected that problem yet. Maybe in the March planning intentions report, they will get that.
Maybe they won't, but the bushels will still be there.
Right.
I mean, even if they don't ever admit that there's that many acres of wheat, they're still going to get planted, those acres that are wheat and look good, and it's green all over down there if you drive around Louisiana, Tennessee, Arkansas, everywhere like that. You know, those will be double crop, believe me. I mean, at these
they'll
prices,
be double crop soybeans, but the more important part might be that if they got the hard red wrong, they put corn acres there, right? Instead,
or Milo,
and
or
we're, well, but I mean, if they're wrong, then we're short corn acres.
Well,
is that correct? Yeah, in the hard red.
Well, maybe in the hard red, but not the Mid-South.
Well, I know, but I'm
in the hard red. It would. They've said they've gone to corn acres, so who knows? That just means we're short somewhere else. I mean, you know, this is a push shove game, is what it is. Well, let me ask you a question, Wayne. You know, you're in crop insurance. What I'm hearing from my people in the Mid-South is they're looking to double crop, but they're very concerned because they know unless they have a track record of double crop, they can only insure one crop. They can either insure the wheat or they can insure the beans until they actually have, you know, that established that they're double crop people. And that's what I'm hearing from them. They're scared because, you know, the severe frost that we had last year, you know, that took so many things down.
They're not concerned about putting the double crop beans out without insurance. They've been doing it for years. And it doesn't take that many bushels to make money this year. I mean, we're talking about, you know, they put double crop beans out. They hit it once with Roundup. And away they go. So, no, they're not concerned about whether they have insurance on that second crop beans because they'll get enough bushels to make sure they got their cost, and a lot of them are thinking about it a lot more than that. And as far as that, a lot of your Mid-South people, they take a cat policy anyhow mm-hmm. on their beans. So
yeah.
There is not I haven't heard any of them that I talked to that have once made any comment, I'm not going to double crop because I can't get crop insurance on the double crop beans. Yeah. They're going to plant.
Well, you know, what's the possibility? This is an off-the-wall comment, but what's the possibility? Because I know he was planning to put 10,000 acres in. What's the possibility that Blair Omaji decides that, you know, $5.50 or $6 corn is enough to make it work and ship it? And does, once he harvests his soybeans, he goes ahead? Because the corn comes after soybeans in the same season.
Well, this is one of Bassey's arguments that he uses, that we'll see, with the price of wheat so high, we'll see wheat exported as face value wheat, and it, therefore we'll buy more corn from other countries. So wheat prices are definitely overpriced, and I'd have a tendency to agree with him with the acreage we see and the weather outlooks in the world. So, in other words, we're going to see more Canadian wheat. We're going to see more wheat in the European Economic Community, more wheat in the future from Australia. And so there is this issue where wheat prices don't need to be a feed grain, and your point's well taken. But the big problem here is that ethanol and the sugar cane is very profitable for those people. And my impression is there's a tremendous amount of wealth available to put production agriculture over, 600 million acres in South America. So the big growth here, once again, we are stimulating growth in everywhere else in the world, but right here in the U.S.
I would agree with that to a point. It certainly appears that on face value, but when you take and look at what the Brazilian real has done versus the American dollar, If you look at, I figured it out for a seminar I just did last week. A year ago, we were at $8.40 on November beans, and they had a $2.49 advantage over us when you converted it back to American dollars and someone who had a currency that was a par of one. In other words, they were at one.
At Rotterdam?
Yes. And now this year, when you look at $13 beans, this is the Brazilian versus the American dollar. Mm-hmm. $13 beans. Somebody has a par of one. They only had a 13-cent advantage over us. It's well held that they need to hold a $3.50 to a $4 comparable advantage with us on the American dollar level to be competitive enough to ship heavy to China.
Well, let's face it, Jackie, they're at least have $10 bushel beans anyway you cut the basis or anything else, and that ought to be a tremendous economic incentive for them to go on and plant, you know, extra acres. They were suffering from fertilizer problems and debts, and but, you know, price is the best fertilizer in the world, and it should stimulate production from here on. And once that crop comes on, that will be available for next April, May, you know, if it'd be 8 to 10%. The point I think we all have to make here is it should stimulate production. It didn't do it last year, but this year it's a different price level.
All right, so here's, I guess, the final question I want to ask. You're the farmer. At this point, you've got an idea of what you're going to plant. You probably went back to the previous year's rotation or split, and now you're looking at $5.39.5 for corn, $13.36.25 for soybeans. Do you change? And if so, in which direction?
Well, I think when you look at the situation, if you didn't put on fall fertilizer, it would certainly encourage me to plant beans. Input costs are less, you know, but they're not nearly, you know, beans are not nearly as reliable in terms of surpassing yields like we've seen corn do.
So let's just make it on the acres you haven't put fertilizer on, because we know if they put fertilizer on, the acres are going to corn, right?
That's right.
Yeah, so. Well, you shook your head no.
No, not always, Todd. I think that some of them might just be banking the fertilizer out there. I think that if they have not put the fertilizer on, we will see a lean towards more beans for two reasons. Number one, cash flow. Number one, availability. Number two, availability of fertilizer. Not just the cost, mm-hmm. but availability. You know, there's a lot of places where the pipeline's pretty dry. There isn't potash in some of these fertilizer facilities. There is not being told that there is nitrogen available to side dress. So, you know, that besides price, I think they have to look at availability. The other thing is availability of good quality seed beans. We're being told by some of the Monsanto, DeKalb, and Asgrow dealers that they are out of beans of good germination quality. So there is a tightness of good quality seed. But I was also in the seed business for 20-some years, and there's generally seed available somewhere.
Yeah.
Paul?
Well, my general impression is that the 90 million acres that the government's talking about is probably a little high at this time, and I think the bean acreage will go up in proportion. The big problem here is that that we could see some food inflation and extremely high prices this coming year, and it's just mainly because we just don't have enough acres here in the U.S. at this time to slow this price rally.
Well, we'll continue our discussion on Tuesday over at the Beef House, and we'll see how the lean toward bean goes at that point. Thanks for being with us, guys.